So today's talk is called Shape Shifting. And this actually started the Sunday when these two were here a month ago when I talked about how we are action figures. You know, the Avengers was coming out and I was saying, we have superpowers. We just don't realize we've got them. And so every week we've been looking at another superpower that we have. And mind control was last week. That's where we all learned how to control everybody else's mind. Do you remember that? And we kind of scaled it back and said, well, you know, actually we do kind of do that. We do that with our manipulation using guilt and anger and a lot of different things. We try to get somebody to change how they're thinking about something. And it's not a lot different than the two-year-old throwing a fit trying to get what they want. You know, and well, that didn't work. And well, none of my friends like me. You know, so they use all these different tools to get what they need. So we talked about that last week. And so shape shifting was something I wrote down at the beginning of the month as a title. And I thought, what the heck am I going to do with that? So I decided to go online and look up shape shifting. Do not do that. There are these people that say they have these convincing videos of how they'll be a news person, and all of a sudden they'll close their eyes, and all of a sudden they'll be reptile eyes, and Oprah Winfrey's one of them, okay? And I just want you to know the reptilians are living amongst us. And so they need shape-shifting to be something that is scary and something that other people are using that only certain people have the ability to do. And in reality, we all are shape-shifting our lives all the time by choosing the thoughts that we choose and by choosing the stories. And a lot of what we do here is unlearn the stories that we came here and somebody gave us stories about life and death and what success looks like and what love looks like and you know, just a lot that how important it is for you to take care of another person's every needs, and you know, and if you're not, then you're not being a good person. And we learned a lot of stuff. So a lot of our life is really unlearning that. And so we get to practice over and over and over again, letting go of some story. And that's what's wonderful about that Beatles song, Imagine, or John Lennon song, actually, Imagine, is that he is saying, just can you imagine if you didn't have the story of countries? Could you imagine if you didn't have the story about possessions, that then there would be enough for everybody to go around? Can you imagine this stuff? And, you know, I hope someday you'll join us, because there's other people who think this way. Or perhaps what he's saying is, I hope you'll join us in the realm where this is possible, where we have adapted to this story, this truth, and this is how we live. And as Jesus said, in my house there are many mansions, many ways of being, all possibilities existing. And he told them, where I'm going, you can't go right now. But perhaps someday you can join me. So we have to wonder sometimes if we're not shape-shifting, if we're not just having thoughts and choosing a story to live in, but that we're also not sliding into another reality where our old self with its old stories still live, but our new self with its new stories is living. And that's why things all of a sudden seem to change, like our whole circle of friends, and life just seems to take on a new flavor. There's a great movie that if you've never seen it called Adaptation, and we were talking about this in the last class, where Nicolas Cage plays both parts. He's a twin. He has a twin brother. And the main character that he's playing, who you see the most, is one who thinks that life is really hard and tough, and it's hard to do the work that he's doing, which is writing a screenplay. He has to adapt a book to screenplay. That he has no friends, and you know, it's just. And then he looks at his brother, who's his twin. His voice sounds the same in everything. And his life just seems to be this great adventure, and he has so many friends, and he looks just like them. He's saying, I'm too fat, and that's why I don't have anybody. His brother looks just like him, and his life is so full. And his brother says, you know, I'm thinking about taking this class on screenwriting. He goes, that is, you know, those are formulas. Don't even go take this class. But he takes the class. And while the original character, the main character, is plodding through writing the screenplay, his other brother takes a class, writes an adventure action film that becomes picked up by Hollywood and becomes a blockbuster. So he can't use the excuse of, we had different histories, we look different, we sound... He couldn't use any of the excuses that we would use as what was my background, the way Mom treated me. Mom probably didn't even know she was talking to half the time. Okay? So, it was a very interesting thing how you could take the same physical being and with the thoughts shape a different life entirely. And I think that, and I know that, is there for all of us. And I know we've tried it in our own lives and we've seen it, that when we change up and let go of some old story that isn't serving us, that a new story is allowed to emerge. But as long as we hold on to the old story, a new story can't emerge. It keeps us stuck. And as that beautiful prayer that Sherry wrote, it was telling us, like, it is shaping us, and that we need all the experiences. And so we need, if we look at any shape, if I look at this, if I hold up this bell for you to look at, you see the bell. You see it because of the positive, which is the bell, but you also see it, if you can see this far, is the negative that gives us the outline of the bell, right? We need the positive and the negative to shape us. And instead of seeing something that we're calling wrong as really being bad, we see it as, here's a choice of how to live. And since it doesn't enliven me, I'm going to let that choice go and choose this other choice instead. And when I do that, I begin shaping my life. Our personality can play tricks on us. It can give us all the reasons to do something and tell us we're too afraid to go for it. Then when we go for it, it says you should never have done this, you bit off more than you can chew. It will tell both sides of the story. You cannot win with just letting your personality do whatever it wants to do. But because we have choices, we have this or that to choose from, that's called free will. And we don't have a nature where we can't move off of it. We tell ourselves, well, that's just my nature. No, that was just my learning experience, is what we should be saying to ourselves. That's what I was taught. But I'm going to play around in this lifetime with picking up things and saying, do I need this? Is this serving me? What if I let go of this belief or this thought? When I was in my 20s, before I had my son, I was actually expecting my son at the time, my father, who I was so close to, who was very passionate about what he did in his life. He loved to cook. He loved to serve people. He had his own restaurant. And people just loved him. But he drank and he smoked. He loved to fish. So my mom thought it would make sense for us to get a place in the country down in what's called Cherryville, Missouri, right around Cuba and Steelville and stuff like that, if you know that area. And he got a 10-acre lake, 40 acres of land. He went for a few times and fished in the lake and never fished again. Very seldom. People would have a hard time getting him down to the lake. Well, it turns out that one of the reasons he liked to fish was to get away from it all, including my mom. So now he had no retreat. Because he couldn't leave now. There was no excuse. How can I say I'm going to leave to go fishing? You know, you got nothing anymore. The story doesn't work. But they ended up moving down there. But he was partially, you know, kind of retired, not retired, going back and forth between the country and the city, and finally fully retired, because he had to retire because he had emphysema so bad, his oxygen was bad, and you didn't want him with a knife in his hand anymore. Well, I hadn't seen him for a while, so I went down to see them, and there he was at the table trying to eat. And as he brought the fork up, he would just totally miss his mouth. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is awful. Mom, what's wrong with him? It was like she didn't even see that he was like doing this. And I thought, why don't you have him at a doctor? So she called the doctor and explained what was going on. He says, oh, it sounds like he doesn't have enough oxygen. You need to get him to St. Louis right away. So we got him to St. Louis, and they did a tracheotomy on him, and he lived, but he stayed in intensive care because he was so bad. And he was there for like the last 3 months of his life. And the day before he was coming home, he called and was able to talk for the first time. And he said, I'm coming home. Don't have that baby before I come home. He died that day. I lived in so much guilt because I thought, why did I go down there that day? Why did I say something? Why did he have to spend the last 3 months of his life because I went down there? Why couldn't I let him just go to sleep? And I lived in guilt for years and years that the person who I was closest to had actually had such a horrible ending because of me. But the truth of the matter was, it was all the choices he had made before then. But I didn't see that. Because when you grow up with an alcoholic, you are codependent and you become responsible for all of their choices. But I couldn't let it go. There was just an incredible sense of loss everywhere I went. And this went on, my son was 7, 8 years old. I still couldn't let it go. And one day, I had a dream where I was driving down Gravois, heading toward the Kudas funeral home in the city, and my dad was driving, and we came to a stoplight. But as we came there, I said, this is terrible to think this, but I'm so glad that we're going to my mom's funeral instead of my dad's funeral. And when the light turned green, he didn't move, and all the other cars went by. And I said, Dad, why aren't you moving? And then it occurred to me, it was him. He's the one who had died. But in this dream, everything was so real. There was dust on the dashboard. I knew who I was. You know how you're like, who am I really in this dream? I knew who he was. There was no like second guessing any. I was in the moment. I could smell the cigarette smoke. I saw him in his short sleeve, light blue shirt that he always wore, poly cotton, good color for him. And I said, oh no, it's you. You're the one. And I started crying, and he held me. And I could feel the wet. I could see the darker ring on the light blue shirt. It was real. It was not a dream. The truth is, and I realized when I was talking to somebody a few weeks ago who had lost their father, when you lose somebody close to you, the only one who can comfort you is the one who you lost. But we live in a story where we believe that's not possible. He was able to hold me and say, everything's okay. I am absolutely fine. You did nothing. We live in a story where we feel guilt that we did not do enough, and in this case, that we did too much. Those that are in the other realm want us to know that who and what we are cannot be harmed by another, that they are perfect and whole, just as we are living behind a story. To understand that if we live in that story, it will shape our lives. If we live in a story of compassion for ourselves and understanding of what we really are, we will live an entirely different life. When we understand that there's no end to what we are, we no longer fear this thing, the story of death. We begin to understand why we came together, why I had that particular father, why we had that kindred soul connection, why I had to experience feeling codependency, why if I have a drink or two of wine, I say that's enough. I understand why I had the authoritarian, the mother, so that I could discipline myself. But he taught me it's important to have passion in your life, to do what you love, to be good to other people. That you don't count in years. That is not something that goes away with the person. Gifts are given to us. And unless we live in the story of the gift, we will shape our lives in a direction that does not heal us and does not serve us. So we're all learning that, and that's why our lives and our stories and our world is changing so much. That's why on a Memorial Day weekend, we don't have flags up here. Because we're moving past that story. We're going deeper. We're connecting with our eternal selves, with our truth, with spirit that's not contained within a body, within a building, within a lifetime. And you all know that. You know your story is not so small. You know you have gifts. And it's little exchanges between people. It's being genuine. It's being authentic. It's allowing. And we get there through compassion for ourselves and love for ourselves. And knowing that we're good. And not buying into the story where we're going to fixate on the few things that we felt we didn't do perfectly, but to understand that we're all evolving and who we are today is not who we were yesterday, nor will it be who we are tomorrow. Thank you.